Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network, bringing you coverage of Star Wars, The Clone Wars. Our hosts will review the toys, books, comics, games, and all things related to The Clone Wars animated series. And after each new episode airs on Cartoon Network, our hosts will recap and review the show. And we want to hear your thoughts on The Clone Wars. Call us at 415-508-JEDI every Saturday after a new episode, and your call may be played on the air.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Republic Forces Radio Network, Season 5. We hope everyone had an enjoyable summer. Hope everyone who got to make it enjoyed Celebration 6. Those of us who weren't are eternally jealous. But we are back for Season 5, Episode 1, which many of you did get to see at Celebration. But with us, I think we have one that did. Jonathan, you got to see it at Celebration, didn't you?
I did. Jerry and I got to see the special red carpet premiere. It was a lot of fun, and the fan reaction was just outstanding. Hey, everyone. Thrilled to be back.
All right, and the rest of us are all noobs to this episode. Join us tonight are Barrent, Master Collect-em-all.
Hey, everybody. Where was I during Celebration 6 while you and Jerry snuck off to see the red carpet?
I think you were in the collecting room, weren't you?
Yes.
And finally joining us is our own continuity expert, Nathan P. Butler, who also didn't make it to Celebration 6, as I didn't.
This is true. So while they were in there seeing the premiere, I was apparently in Georgia. So thanks, guys, for the invitation.
But it's okay, because we all got to see it on Saturday morning. I ain't getting up at 9:30 Saturday morning.
I got up at 9:30 on Saturday morning. I got up and I watched it and I was cranky and I went right back to sleep.
That's right. Clone Wars in its new time on Saturday mornings for those of you who watch it on iTunes or online. Clone Wars has moved, so now you get to watch it in the morning rather than Friday night. So it's a little bit closer to when we record, so a little bit fresher in our minds, we hope.
And Dan, for those of you who have been concerned about when it's going to show up online, if the first episode's any indication, it showed up on both StarWars.com and iTunes on Sunday, which I wasn't sure was going to happen because usually Sunday is kind of an off day for businesses. They also managed to put up the episode guide stuff on Sunday this time around. I was quite impressed.
All right. So let's jump right in with our overall thoughts on the episode, and then we'll break it down a little bit. Let's get things started with Jonathan, actually. You saw this before. Did seeing this episode again bring anything back that you'd missed? And what were your overall thoughts on this episode?
Well, as I stated in the special C6 episode, I really did enjoy this, you know, this sort of completion to the end of, the way I see it, completion to the end of the season 4 arc. The interesting thing is that I was able to hear a lot more. Seeing it at the red carpet premiere, it was very loud, and there were certain things that happened and certain sequences that the crowd really roared, and I found that I missed especially some of the audio was going on. It was interesting to see it. I picked up probably more details, certain things that I remember going back and was like, oh yeah, that was a lot of fun. Specifically the blue snaggle's tooth. That was a lot of fun for me.
All right, Barrent, you didn't get to see this at Celebration 6, but no doubt you heard people talking about it. Did it live up to your expectations?
Oh man, I did. You know, people, Jonathan and Jerry had seen it at Celebration 6, and I was working the collecting track room, but I had the benefit of having to work and kind of stay spoiler free when it came to it. I asked my son and my brother actually were able to see that, and I didn't want to hear anything about it, you know, and they were chomping at the bit to tell me. So I was anticipating the season premiere kind of like anticipating the season one premiere from, you know, all those years ago. And it was very exciting. And I think that this episode can stand up to any of the best episodes that this Clone Wars series has released so far. So I was very happy. It really, really brought the show to a higher echelon, I think, this season for the opening story arc.
All right, and Nathan.
You know, I really enjoyed the episode. I'm kind of surprised it was just a one-off as opposed to a part of an arc. But, of course, it was moved to earlier in the season. It wasn't originally meant to be the premiere, so maybe that's rejiggered things just a little bit. I was sort of dreading it because the online preview for Shadow Conspiracy had revealed the big death in this episode beforehand, and it was a death being redone from the EU, so I was concerned. I wanted to see how this was going to play out, and it turned out to be quite a fun episode, you know, shouldn't have had any doubts given the way that the last episode last season worked out. My only regret in watching the episode is that, unfortunately, we're still about a month away from the final issue of one of the two comic series that are meant to lead into this episode. So some of the exploits of Maul and Savage between last season and this one, we haven't seen the end of yet. But I think having read that stuff, the stuff that is out prior to it, I really got a lot out of the episode, and I hope that they don't let it leave us hanging for the next, you know, 5, 6, 7 weeks before we come back to this part of the series.
All right. Now, I enjoyed this episode myself, but as with past seasons, and since I've kind of stepped away from the collecting the comics individually, I wait for them to show up in trade paperback. I am not a fan of having had to read a comic to know what's going on, so I had no idea what was what we were looking at going into this, why suddenly things were different, why Asajj wasn't there. But, you know, I was able to get over it and go on with my life and still enjoy the episode very much. It was a lot of fun. It was kind of fun to see everybody getting the crap knocked out of them, really. So, good episode. Looking forward to see what else they bring us in this season.
Now, Dan, let me ask you a question. Besides the Asajj suddenly not being there, was there anything else that felt like it didn't fit? I mean, as I said, I felt that this was really a good sort of picking up where season four left off. I didn't really see that there were too many loose ends that couldn't easily be explained away or even that I noticed. But I'm curious, was there other things that you picked up on?
There were comments made by Savage and Maul about how this is what they'd kind of been doing. And even Obi-Wan kind of mentioned, and Adegaya mentioned that they were on their trail. This is like other things that they've done. I think we're getting warm. And it's kind of like last we saw that just flew away like last week. Well, last season. So I guess obviously months have passed. And also one other thing that bugged me, and I know one of our voicemails talks about this too. Caller mentions that, you know, we didn't get to see this big attack by Grievous on Hondo's base. I kind of would like to have seen that.
Well, they've said that that's going to be in an upcoming episode, I believe. I don't know how that's going to play into it, because they've said that most of the stuff from here on out is pretty much, you know, chronological order, but it's certainly hinted at within the slideshow stuff on StarWars.com's episode guide that we will get a chance to see that.
You know, Nathan, I saw that on the slideshow, and I'm wondering, because there was the young Jedi thing that Arnie was able to see, and I know both Grievous and Hondo were in that. I'm wondering if that was what they were talking about, that a few lucky individuals at C6 were able to see that, or if it's something else.
That is a good question. We will hopefully find out the answer here in the upcoming season. So let's jump right into the action. We do see Maul and Savage attacking this floating platform, this space station, and we get to see in the aftermath once they've done their damage, and there's a little bit of a confrontation between Maul and Savage. Savage kind of thinks they should be running this as a partnership or a cheerocracy, but Maul's very quick to let him know that this is a cheer-tatorship, and he is in charge, and they're going to do it the old Sith rule of two way, even though they're like number 23 and 24 in that line.
This scene was one of the most powerful scenes in this episode. And this episode had many powerful scenes that had a lot of different connotations with it. You have Savage, who wants to share the power. You know, it's not just the rule of two anymore out there. You know, there's all different types of apprentices running around out there. And Savage, in his nature, it is to share. It is to save his brother. You know, when we first meet Savage, he's a good guy. You know, he's trying to protect his brother from the trials and tribulations, and he kind of gets turned into this monster. So it really makes sense for Savage to want to share the power. But then you have, on the other hand, you have Maul, who is old school, you know, and he's the rule of two. I am the master apprentice, not brother. And I couldn't help but think of The Empire Strikes Back, where you have Vader, who tells Luke, come with me, and we will rule the galaxy as father and son. He doesn't say as master and apprentice. He says as father and son. He wants to share that power with Luke, because Vader, as we learn, started off as a good person. You know, so he has that good still in him. And so I think this is setting it up to where we're going to see that Savage still has good in him. And I think this sets up the potential for a betrayal of Savage to Maul.
I certainly see that as a possibility. There is definitely the tension between them. But, you know, Maul has a very sort of set agenda. While he talks about wanting revenge on Kenobi and that being one of his goals. I also happen to think that he wants revenge on the Sith Lord that discarded him, that he was there after the Battle of Naboo. You know, he was suffering and he was essentially sort of discarded. Sidious said, okay, well, done with you, moving on. And if you've read the Darth Plagueis novel, that was almost always his intention. You know, Maul was never intended really to be the successor as I took that. And now we see that Maul is kind of building an army. He doesn't necessarily need that army for revenge on Kenobi, but he does need that army, you know, to develop that army and the followers if he's going to take on Sidious.
Well, I mean, the whole conversation with the two of them, I mean, that it's trademark Sith. Right? I mean, it's one wants the power, the other one wants it too, except one of them needs to be the dominant one. So immediately they start going at each other. I mean, this is why Lucas flat out said when they were in the process of putting together the new Jedi Order books for Del Rey, when they wanted to have these essentially be Sith or proto-Sith as the invaders, not Yuuzhan Vong aliens, he said, no, that's not going to happen. You can't really have this long-standing tradition of this big Sith society working together because generally they won't. Now, we've seen that go a different way in Legacy and in the Old Republic video game and the spin-offs to that. But in Lucas's mind, at least, which is where this series is coming from, Sith will always be at each other. They will always have that greed, that lust for power that turns them against each other. So to see Maul stepping in here essentially as, you know, he's the mastermind. He's got the ability to think tactically like any Sith would. You know, we saw his sort of faraway look when we met him back in Revenge, you know, the whole thing about, you know, so it started without me when referring to the Clone Wars. You know, he's got the mindset to look at the big picture, which a lot of folks never gave him credit for. And now he's the one who has to put that into motion. Essentially, Savage is just the battering ram to get things done, just like he would have been for Asajj and presumably for Dooku as well. And we see this dominance play out, I think, in one of the coolest of the action moments of it, albeit very short, when we have, yeah, it's a brief little lightsaber duel, but when Maul essentially takes one of his feet, one of these big clamp metal feet, and just grabs him and boom, you know, he kind of like lifts himself up and leverages himself and slams Savage down to the ground with it. You know, he's making use of what has now made him whole again as a way of dominating his brother. So from a lot of angles, you've got essentially what amounts to a straight up Sith dominance thing here. Nothing unusual though, right?
No, I didn't say unusual. I mean, that is typical of what I think we've come to expect from the Sith. But something you said, Nathan, that kind of made me think is, sure, Savage is kind of interpreted as the animal. You said the battering ram, the blunt instrument. Well, in a lot of ways, in the EU, that is how Dooku and other people described Maul, that he was the blunt instrument. So it's possible that there is more to Savage than we've seen. So, you know, it's possible, Barrett, that it could go like you see it, that Savage may be the redeemer.
Yeah, it's certainly looking that way to me. But, you know, another thing about this scene is the lines. I mean, the writing, whoever was doing the writing in this crew, and I'm sure we know who's doing the writing, but they really took the time to develop these characters out. I mean, we have one of the best lines, one of many, where right before, you know, the scuffle, Maul says to him, "So it's time for a lesson." And that line right there was just the coolest line everywhere. We knew that something was going to go down. So, I mean, this scene altogether was, you know, I think it showed a lot of the character development that we're going to see in the future.
And at some point, the Sith rule of two must have been interpreted by someone of Yoda's species, because we wind up having Maul repeat back, "Always two, there are." As opposed to saying, "There are always two." He's using Yoda syntax here. But no, if there is going to be a seed of good in Savage, I won't discount it. I don't think it's going to happen. I won't discount it, though. I want to see Maul's reaction, and Savage's, really, because he didn't seem like he was really in his right mind at the time. I want to see them have a conversation about Feral, the other brother that Savage was forced to kill immediately upon being changed. That, in and of itself, could be an interesting twist to this brother dynamic, because there was a third. At least as far as we can tell, he's certainly a brother to Savage, and unless we're talking half-brothers or something here, he should be a brother to Maul as well.
But a different type of brother. I got the impression, again, from reading Plagueis, that, you know, Maul and Savage were more like twins. And the other Zabrak that was in the Night Sisters episodes way back in season 3, I didn't necessarily take him as actually being a brother. It's just being, you know, a close friend, like a brother.
From what I understand, he's the younger brother of the two. But that may just be me reading a bit into some of the adaptation material there that they've made about the episodes.
Okay, moving right along. We want to get to the pirate part, right? Adegaya and Kenobi are hot on Savage and Maul's trail, but they're not any fun. They just state the obvious. Yep, they were there. Yep, they're on their way. More importantly, Maul and Savage are in the process of, I guess, ambushing. That's how it looked to me, anyway, that they pretty much set up a chance to trap some pirates so that they could sway them, and sway them they did. And it turns out to be three battle groups from good old Hondo's group of pirates. Nice to see Hondo back in the action.
It was great to see Hondo and his attitude, the sort of the flippant, you know, manner. My favorite, I think one of my favorite lines in this whole episode was, you know, when Maul says, well, three of your lieutenants have already joined me. And Hondo goes, those traitors scum. I'm so proud.
But so betrayed, right? I like the fact that we got Hondo back. It's finally time for him to come back into the picture. He's one of the more amusing characters that we have. He gets the best lines in it, although he's constantly calling people maniacs and crazies. He's constantly using it. It's like he can't say anything about the Horned Men. Can you just call them the Sith, please? What I found interesting here, and this is sort of a how far can they take it? You know, we've had the whole issue of different species being given sort of different accents, like the Twi'leks tending to have sort of that French accent to them. Aayla Secura, the ones from the Ryloth trilogy and such. Generally, you got sort of it's almost like an Australian sounding accent out of a lot of the people that are a lot of the Weequays that are around Hondo. But this time it was like they were grabbing accents left and right. It was like, if it's not an accent that we normally hear from a regular character, let's just throw it on a Weequay. We had Jiro, we had Sabo, we had Goru, these different Weequay. The first one, Jiro, has that really heavy accent, the one where it's like when he talks, his whole body is shifting all the time. We get Goru, the big guy, we wind up seeing Sabo get killed. But as you go through there, even the guy with the little, it's like a bandana across the bottom of his face, they're all using different accents. I don't know if that's meant to say that this is sort of a ragtag crew pulled from all over the universe or what, but it really kind of struck me as odd that, you know, this pirate group is, let's just throw some other accents together here. It did not feel like there was a sense of, well, not timeline continuity, but continuity between the different members of that group at all.
Oh, I think you hit it on the head right there. I think it is a group of criminals from all over the place. And it would make sense that if you have these criminals who are banding together, they would have all different accents from all over the place, depending on where they did time or what barge they did time on or where they've done their adventures. But what I like most about it is that you have all of these eclectic group of criminals that are following the eclectic leader who, as you said, Nathan, or as you said, Jonathan, has the best lines. I think Hondo steals the show. I mean, he says to Maul, when Maul and Savage give him a call and say, hey, you know, three of your lieutenants have already pledged their allegiance to me. You know, what does Hondo say? He says, you know, you aren't the only two laser sword maniacs I've had to deal with. You know, he doesn't back down at all. And when he talks to Kenobi for the first time, I started busting out laughing because the first thing he does is he just starts complaining to Kenobi. As you said, we don't get to see this invasion of Dooku in Hondo's area, but Hondo starts letting Kenobi have it. You know, you let Dooku come in here and ransack my things, and now I have to pick through what was once my great empire. You know, he just starts complaining to him. I thought that was really cool. That is the Hondo that I know and love.
I just wanted Savage and Maul to get off the ship and for him to turn to Maul and say, Savage isn't mine, is he?
Oh, wow.
There are a couple things that didn't get tied up, though, so I know we're probably going to see Hondo again later on, because we know Hondo has Slave 1, and he's going to have to give that back to Boba eventually, right? So I think we're going to see Hondo in the future.
But Boba's not in Season 5.
He's in 6, or the theatrical movie.
did we see Slave 1 in this one? Was it in the background somewhere? I didn't notice it.
I didn't see it.
No, I looked. There was some wreckage of different spaceships, but Slave 1 was not a part of it that I saw.
Well, the whole camp was wreckage, and they took the model from the last time we saw him and basically using the same format destroyed it. I thought it was, that was in on StarWars.com, and I thought that was kind of an interesting change of design. It's one of those little details that I liked.
Speaking of details and the pirates and everything, you know, the pirates are running. They go in for the kill. They try to get Maul and Savage, only to have the tables turned on them, and they're looking through the cargo. And yeah, you got the blasters and that kind of thing, you know, the arm shipment type. But then they open up the little container, and it's Sasana Spice, or Sensana Spice. I love the fact that they use that particular reference, because that is a spice from the Marvel series. That's Marvel Annual Number 2, Shade Shine. They really, when they dig into stuff, they're digging for references a lot of times into either the stuff that the creative team has made themselves, like Shipyards of Doom, or they're digging into stuff that is video games, because Lucas is much more connected to LucasArts than to a lot of the other licensees, or they're digging back into really, really early stuff, like the first round of Del Rey or the Marvel stuff, which is really kind of cool to see, because it's something that current fans of the EU probably wouldn't necessarily catch, but those who have been fans for a long time would catch those little tiny nods they put in there. It's always nice to see them pay homage to some of the first Star Wars EU stories.
They referenced a route called the Hydean Way, which I had to do some research on what the Hydean Way was. Is the Hydean Way from the Marvel comics as well?
Hydean Way's been in the EU for a long time. I don't know if it was first mentioned in Marvel or not, but it's one of those major trade routes. It got a lot of explanation and story of how it all came together in the Essential Atlas in the last few years.
I think this is something that we're going to see a lot of this season. I think that Filoni and the team is really starting to delve into the EU where they previously had more avoided it. We're going to see other things coming up this year. If you've taken a look at some of the previews, we're seeing Species, the Feline. We're seeing, you know, Worlds. They're starting to pull from a lot of EU, probably maybe in a way to engage some of the fans that might not have otherwise been involved. And I think taking it a detail as to go back to the Marvel series to pull a name, really a throwaway line, it shows some interest that maybe we haven't seen before.
It will be interesting to see if they are delving into old continuity for lines like this that people say, wow, I thought I was the only one who read that comic 20 years ago. Or if they've run out of things in present continuity to bend and alter.
Well, the Feline at least was something that Lucas would be more familiar with because of Shadows of the Empire and his input into that. I was actually more surprised to see the blue Snaggletooth, who, I don't know if this is supposed to be Zutton from the actual EU previous stuff, and you know where the card game identified him and everything, or not. But it was very cool to see that design come back from the old action figures. Lots of fun little references back. It seems like they're having more fun with it now than back maybe two seasons ago, where it seemed like half the time that we saw stuff, it had the little frustrating way of, this is why we did it this way, it was done this way, but we're doing it this other way stuff that they used to put in the episode guides. Now it just seems like they're having fun with the little tie-ins.
I think that you're going to see as this season goes on, it's something that Filoni mentioned at C6, that they are trying to have a little bit more fun with it. He called out the blue Snaggletooth after the red carpet premiere and said that, you know what, they are going to be pulling in some references from the original Cantina and some of the toys. Again, just to, you know, give something, I think he said give something to the fans. And again, maybe it's the cynic in me, but I think this is their way of really trying to pull the fans that maybe have drifted away back in.
Hey, if you want to give me something, give me some of these toys, okay? They had some out-of-this-world toys. Who would not love one of those pirate ship spheres, spaceships that they had going? Or the Darth Maul Savage Opress cargo ship battle pack that they could sell? I mean, they had some really cool spaceships in this one. And if that's what they want to give me some of that.
And a time where Hasbro's walking away from bigger vehicles, I think you'll be more likely to see an animated style blue Snaggletooth.
You know, I can't believe we haven't talked about, you know, the big surprise in this episode yet. The four-way fight.
That is our big wrap-up. We're going to talk about that big fight, starting with kind of everybody showing up at once. Maul and Savage and their gang of pirates versus Hondo and his pirates, and Adi and Obi-Wan show up. So it's just a big, massive brawl, pirate on pirate, and two Jedi on two Sith, at least for a little bit.
You know, I have to say that just looking at the animation, again, I think it looks so much better than what I remember some of the intense fighting looking like last year. It seems like, I don't know if the lighting or the shading or even just the speed and detail in the animation, but I loved the look of the fighting, even when Adigalia dies, just even something as much as the look on her face, you actually see her eyes bulge out a little bit with the impact, you know, getting gored by Savage there.
Well, that was a pretty stinking brutal death. I mean, that one surprised me. I would have never have guessed that's how they would have killed somebody in this series, ever, hands down.
That was a huge gasp moment during the premiere. It was like everybody in the theater collective, like, as you said, Dan, oh my God, I can't believe they went there. And for me, it's kind of a surprising thing to put on a Saturday morning when you're eating your C-3POs.
See, I'm the exact opposite. To me, that felt like one of the weaker deaths that we got in this series, because on the one hand, okay, we don't see much of her fight against Savage, other than the fact that both of them, Adigalia and Obi-Wan, seem obsessed with Savage's knee, okay? But just constantly we see more of Obi-Wan's side than hers, except for the kick at the knee that didn't work and whatnot. It took me until the second viewing to get the idea that he had charged her and essentially had stabbed her with his horns, although we don't see any tearing of anything because she's immediately holding over it, so it's not like it was particularly brutal looking. And then, of course, when the death blow is finally delivered, we don't see it. It's like half the other times where on a show you've got somebody who's attacking with a sword of some kind, the dead person or the dying person's on the ground, we get almost a first-person perspective from them, and the blade comes down, but all we see is the man stabbing the blade down. We don't see the actual kill. We don't see much in the way of Obi-Wan having any kind of force reaction to it, and even as the episode goes along, her death, except for the brief mention where he's like, she's dead to Hondo, it seems like her death meant absolutely nothing in the span of the episode. She was there to die, to have some kind of impact that did not play throughout the rest of the episode. I'm hoping that maybe we'll see something coming out of this that's broader, the fact that they were able to kill a Jedi Council member, so maybe we should take them as a bigger threat, though even then, it sure doesn't seem like that at the end of the episode, that anybody's willing to take this as a bigger threat when he just offed a Council member. Part of my frustration comes from the fact that she had already died in an EU story, but it's the same story where Asajj was meant to go off and do her own thing after working for Dooku, so that comic series is probably tossed out at some point anyway, at least most of it. But to have a character like this die that doesn't seem to have much impact to not just the overall story, but to that episode, doesn't seem like it fit. Even Peele was handled so much better when it came to his death, because his death at least meant something in the span of the episode. I mean, aside from giving Obi-Wan the chance to fight with two lightsabers, what did Adigalia's death mean in this episode? Not much!
Nathan, what exactly were you looking for there? When Adigalia died, Obi-Wan had to retreat, and maybe, I don't know, were you looking for more of a reaction from him? I don't think at that point he had the time. He was kind of like, okay, now it's gone from 2-on-2 to 2-on-1. I need to get the bleep out of here.
I don't know. I was looking for something that, I don't know, if it wasn't going to have some major impact right then, aside from that, just whether it's facial expression or a comment at the moment from Obi-Wan. This is a guy that can feel, you know, millions of people suddenly crying out in terror and then exploding on Alderaan, and yet he seems to show no reaction to the death of a Jedi just a few feet away from him. And then he makes his comment to Hondo, and yes, certainly he must have to put that out of his mind as he's fighting. He doesn't allow it to bring him to a rage or anything the way that he almost did with the mention of Qui-Gon's death when Maul was fighting him back in Revenge. But then you get to the end of the episode when things have calmed down, and we don't get any payoff with it. We don't get any, we're transporting the body back or anything like that type of shots. We don't get any reaction, it seems, from Yoda or Anakin or anyone else in that meeting at the end of the episode. It would seem like that would be the perfect time to make some mention of it, but it's just kind of there. I mean, I guess I should be glad that they weren't killed, as it seems like Finn Erte and the person who's not Ima Gundy but uses the same character model from the opening newsreel from stuff that we haven't seen, but it felt like it had no impact. It's like we dropped the stone into the water and all it did was sink. It didn't make any ripples except for right as it touched.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, but I think it also falls in the vein of all Council members who try to fight, right? That's what happened in episode 3. How many Council members did Sidious cut off? And we didn't see really any reaction from Mace Windu feeling their deaths or anything. And those guys were never mentioned again. So it follows in the vein of episode 3.
See, I think just in, again, and maybe I'm bringing my own baggage to this. I think the Jedi are taught to let go. I mean, Yoda goes into it in episode 3. You don't mourn for those who have died. You celebrate the fact that they've gone into the Force. And Obi-Wan really didn't have time to go there.
But you don't mention them when dealing with the question of, they're not really, they're just petty crooks, as the line that was either a pickup line or definitely not Abercrombie says. Palpatine is playing this off as if this is not a threat they really need to worry about. Of course, you know, because he's Sidious and everything. And Yoda's kind of nodding and agreeing, the idea that, you know, this is sort of clouding Obi-Wan's judgment and whatnot. And nowhere in that conversation does somebody say, okay, but they just killed a Jedi Council member just recently during this mission. Maybe we should take it seriously. No one mentions that. There's no point at which anything is said. Oh, Anakin is in the scene, if I remember correctly, and has like this scowl going on. Even Anakin doesn't say, excuse me, something's screwed up here. Again, it's one of those things, you know, if you're going to put the rifle on the wall in Act 2, make sure it's used by Act 3, etc., etc. She died, rifle was put on the wall, end of the episode, they forgot it was there.
I mean, I could see how it would be interpreted that way. I guess I just assume that they can't put everything in every episode, and I'm comfortable with the idea that maybe they dealt with that at her funeral and discussed those impacts off screen.
One would hope.
All right, backing up just a little bit to that fight again, we see Maul and Savage get their butts kind of handed to them by Kenobi. He's finally worked on that leg of Savage. He takes an arm. Maul loses a leg. Now we know why he's going to have new legs. And all the while, they're leaking Night Sister magic. Kind of weird.
They're very gassy, yes.
And I like the fact that Maul's loss of leg doesn't come at the hands of Obi-Wan. It's just a lucky shot from the sheer number of blaster bolts coming at him from Hondo's men, which is kind of nice to let somebody other than a Jedi deal some damage to those two.
I thought it was Hondo that actually made the shot, because he was the actual one who was actually chasing Maul. But I found it very interesting that Maul would feel pain off mechanical legs.
I didn't know if it was pain or just the shock. I mean, because remember, he not only lost the ankle and the foot, but now he was off balance. And Savage had to, you know, one-armed Savage had to help him sort of stagger to the ship because he couldn't run anymore.
And it's interesting that of the two, you know, it seems like Savage is the more extreme. You know, granted, he is not the one with the big plans and everything. He's not the one we're expecting to turn out to be the leader of these. And maybe it goes hand in hand with him being the battering ram, him being the animal of the two. But he's also the one here at the end that takes the extreme reaction of, you know, my arm just got cut off. We just got a beat down. You know, just it's over. We're just going to die. And it takes Maul to be the one to say, no, get in the escape pod. We're actually going to survive this, which is interesting. It makes me wonder if that is an emotional extreme thing for Savage, or if there's something else, you know, to what the character must have been experiencing, because it seems odd for him to have just lost an arm and, you know, be thinking everything is dead, unless it's just Maul having had experience with losing body parts who's taking it in stride, or limping stride as the case may be.
Let's think about this, though. Savage is probably in shock to some degree. I mean, look what happened to Luke in Empire. I mean, he was completely battered, and after losing his hand, in some ways he was almost ready to give up when the Falcon escapes. I think it was similar. What I find interesting is that the Savage and Maul dynamic is turning very much into sort of a symbiotic relationship, where even though Maul places himself as the master, the two of them are they really need each other. Neither one could function without the other. You see that as they're escaping.
Well, yeah, because when Savage gets hammered by Obi-Wan, having cut off his arm and everything, you hear that concern in Maul's voice that I would not have expected from someone just being the master to the apprentice. You hear the Savage, you know, where he's really concerned about his brother. So no matter what he says about I'm the master, you're the apprentice, that brother dynamic is still working even on Maul's side of things, no matter how much he seems like he's trying to downplay it.
And Nathan, a side note here, you're our continuity guy, and I'm pretty sure my memory is serving me right. Is this, with the exception of Dooku and Revenge of the Sith, who loses everything, is this the first time we see somebody lose their left arm with a lightsaber? Hasn't everybody always lost a right arm?
Wow.
Except for the Wampa.
I have no idea. That is not the kind of question I would ever expect from a continuity standpoint. EU-wise, certainly not. In Lucas Productions, I have no idea.
Hands off to you, Dan. Hands
Ponda
off
Boba
to you.
Lost his right arm. Vader lost his right arm. Luke lost his right arm. Anakin lost his right arm.
Yeah. Dooku lost both.
His hands.
With the exception of Dooku, who lost both his hands and then lost his head.
Yeah, you're right. The Wampa lost his right arm. I think this, or his left arm, his right arm, his left arm, I mean.
The Wampa lost his left, but.
Right. So I think this might be the only character who to lose his right, ever.
Wasn't there a website at one point, the Severed Arms of Star Wars or something like that?
Something like that. I do remember from that, from some time back. All right. Do we have any final thoughts before we move along to Continuity Corner?
I like the fact how after all of this happens, they go back and talk to Palpatine, and he trivializes it as a personal, quote-unquote, personal problem for Obi-Wan, and that's why they're not going to send any more resources after it. And Yoda agrees with him. What's that about?
Well, was it really Palpatine who was downplaying it, you know, talking about them and the people with them as petty crooks, or was that some ventriloquist throwing his voice? Because it sure wasn't the voice we expected from Palpatine. That's the most jarring, badly inserted line I've ever heard in the Clone Wars.
You know, I was thinking about this, and yeah, Yoda agrees with Palpatine, but what do you guys think? At this point in the war, do the Jedi trust the Supreme Chancellor? I mean, yes, they work with him and they do his bidding, but do they trust him? And could this just be Yoda saying, sure, whatever. Yeah, we agree with you. And then kind of pushing forward their own agenda.
No, it's because they wait until Palpatine leaves before Yoda says to Obi-Wan, this is too close to you. You know, if he shows up again, then we'll act, but this is too close for you. So I think he generally agrees with him. That's the interpretation, the impression I got.
Well, see, and I thought about that. And yes, he says that it's too close to Obi-Wan. So maybe Obi-Wan shouldn't get involved again, but that's no reason that other Jedi may be keeping an eye out for him, if not actively searching. I don't know, just a thought.
But the whole point of Obi-Wan going after him, when Yoda first sends Obi-Wan after him, is the very fact that Yoda says that Obi-Wan needs to finish the job he started a long time ago. So he was chosen because it was personal for him. And now this is the reason why, you know, I just found that interesting.
That was before they discovered that he had, you know, ganged up with Savage Opress. And as I know we're going to discuss in a little bit, Obi-Wan was not the only one searching out there for Maul.
He's just the lucky one.
Well, the dark side clouds everything, all decisions. And then we see Sidious raise his head. You know, he doesn't have his cowl on. He doesn't have his robe on over his head, but that is Sidious smiling. And so far up to this point, that's the only Sidious that we see, is when Palpatine is doing his evil smiles like that. But, you know, in the future, we see that he's planning something, and we know that we are going to see Darth Sidious proper coming up.
Well, yeah, he's happy as a lark now. He thinks he just got the Jedi to ignore Darth Maul, while Darth Maul is going to kill him one by one. He's not even going to have to worry about it.
And also, he knows that Maul is looking to raise an army. You know, he says, oh, sure, we don't need to worry about, you know, the pirates and the scum. But, you know, doesn't this sort of fit his ultimate goal with the Clone Wars, that the galaxy is thrown into more turmoil? He's able to exert his power and control over the military and use the military to, you know, protect everyone, and thereby putting him in position to better control things after the events of Revenge of the Sith.
I'm so proud. Sadly, I'm going to have to kill him, but I am so proud.
It would make sense. That would be that would fit Sidious's MO, as it were. All right. Now it's time for Continuity Corner with our own Nathan P. Butler.
As expected by most viewers, based on previous seasons, this week's episode, Revival, did not pick up where Season 4's finale, Revenge, left off, despite the way it was portrayed by members of the production team in interviews online. Instead, we jump ahead by a bit, so that questions remain as to what happened to Asajj Ventress after Revenge, and where the Knight Brothers went after those events. Fortunately, we already have those answers in the form of two comics by Dark Horse Comics that are meant to bridge that gap. The first of these is The Sith Hunters, a comic in the same Clone Wars Digest line that included Shipyards of Doom, the Henry Gilroy comic that was heavily borrowed from to create the Carbonite sneaking and other events in the Citadel arc. The Sith Hunters is unusual, though, in that it is written by Henry Gilroy and Stephen Melching, both writers on the series, in a pointed effort to create an official bridge between Seasons 4 and 5. It's about as official a story of what happened after Revenge that we can get, without it coming from Lucas himself. In The Sith Hunters, Obi-Wan and Asajj arrive at O'Tor's hub, a space station, in their ejected bridge of the ship in which they fought Maul and Savage. Obi-Wan offers to give favorable testimony at Asajj's trial if she were to switch sides and help the Republic against the Separatists, but she refuses. He then orders newly arrived troopers to let her go, since, as he puts it, she might come around yet. That is the last of Asajj that we've seen so far. A strike team is then assembled by the Jedi Order to hunt down Maul and Savage. It includes the familiar faces of Obi-Wan and Plo Koon, along with several new characters. Master Bru Jin Fan, a Force combat expert, Master Groto, Master Solok, Padawan Tatsu, and clone troopers under Captain Mojo. They track Maul and Savage to Yellow Blade's Landing, where the brothers have landed in the rest of their ship using an alternate bridge, and offer to let members of the Scourge Gang serve them, only to end up killing them all when they refused. The brothers end up finding an unnamed woman who is held prisoner in one of the gang's old bases, who offers them untold riches from her wealthy family if they help her get back to her world and face her brother, who has taken over the family business. Along the way, they help her for their own ends, only to be defeated by the Jedi and forced to leave without much of their fortune. And the Jedi team is joined by Anakin, while it also loses some of its new one-off members, which pretty much anyone picking up the comic would have predicted. The most interesting element of the Sith Hunters is perhaps its flashbacks to how Maul made his way from being cut in half in The Phantom Menace to being a spider monster on Lotho Minor in Brothers. The bottom of the shaft on Naboo apparently ended in liquid, presumably a form of plasma or waste from plasma production, where Maul's legs were destroyed. He used the dark side to keep his top half alive, and it was shunted into a container of the liquid that was then put onto a ship that dumped it on Lotho Minor. Upon emerging from the broken container, he saved Morley, the snake creature, the Anacondan, from a garbage-mashing droid and was taken by Morley into the caves, where his own dark side connection and rage drew junk to him to create the spider-like bottom half that we saw in the episode, pretty much the way Sam Witwer described it in his interviews. The second comic series is still going. It's a four-issue series called Darth Maul Death Sentence by Tom Taylor. With three out of the four issues released, it's hard to give a detailed summary, but suffice it to say that Maul and Savage have accidentally killed an agent of wealthy and corrupt Jabog, a shipping magnate, on the planet Morshong. Jabog has thus put a bounty on their heads. They confront him face to face over the issue, but another Jedi team, this time consisting of Master Salmara, Master Judd, and Padawan Dre, yes, the same Dre as in the New Jedi Order era comic series Invasion, also written by Taylor, confronts the brothers there. While Savage languishes in carbonite due to an accident during that battle, Maul is able to get the planet's oppressed natives to act as his army, to give him a chance to get his brother back. They believe that Maul is a savior from native prophecy. Yeah, that'll end well. The big continuity issue for Revival, of course, is the death of Jedi Council member Adi Gallia. She has previously appeared in over half a dozen episodes of The Clone Wars, and her absence from the Jedi Council in Revenge of the Sith has made her death something that the Expanded Universe had explored in the years before the cartoon series began. In the original Clone Wars continuity that consisted of the video games, Dark Horse comics, Del Rey novels, and such, Adi Gallia met her fate at the hands of General Grievous on Boz Pity in the comic book miniseries Obsession. Her appearance in that comic and her death therein would now seem to have suffered the same fate as the appearance and death of Even Peel in Coruscant Knight's Jedi Twilight. It would appear to have been wiped from continuity by the character dying in the cartoon series. Interestingly, Obsession had already suffered a heavy continuity blow during the Night Sisters trilogy and Asajj's story arc, because Obsession had seen Asajj still working with Dooku right near the end of the war, only to end up leaving his service and heading out into the galaxy to pursue her own future by the end of Obsession. She is, at the time, presumed dead. With her no longer with Dooku in the cartoon, the comic was already in continuity limbo, and it would be easy to think that Adi Gallia's death might have been the final nail in the miniseries' coffin. I should also note that Adi Gallia's death was spoiled long before Revival aired. Jason Fry has written an upcoming young reader adaptation of the episodes Revival, Eminence, Shades of Reason, and The Lawless, which is entitled Darth Maul Shadow Conspiracy. Amazon.com put up a short preview of the book's contents months ago, wherein the scene featuring Adi Gallia's death was featured. As River Song might say, spoilers! With that, we'll wrap up this week's Continuity Corner and await where the season goes from here.
Now, we did get a few voicemails this week, so let's take a listen to what you all thought of Season 5, Episode 1, Revival.
Hey, guys. This is Ryan. Just calling in to let you know my thoughts of the season 5 premiere revival. I'm going to start off by saying, like, this episode was awesome, probably one of the best of the series. I just really enjoyed it. I loved the newsreel, actually, because you got to see a little bit of a fight that went on between Revenge and the new episode. And it was just good to see what Maul and Savage were doing before it got to that point, because it seemed like there was a good amount of time jump. I also thought that the fight between Maul and Savage was very cool in the beginning, but I also thought it was too short since it was like 5 seconds long and then it was over and Maul was like, "You're the apprentice." And once you get later on in the episode, I thought it was also very cool to see Maul actually team up with Hondo's gang, except Hondo doesn't want to team up with them, so he teams up with Kenobi, who came, which was actually really cool to see. And Hondo. Hondo's back. Thank you, the creators of the show, because Hondo is awesome and they need to have him more in this show. And it was just awesome to see him back. He's going to be in the Onderon arc. We know that from the trailer, which is going to be really cool. And, yeah. But I want to see also Grievous's invasion of Hondo's gang in form. They mentioned that and just kind of like breezed right through it and didn't really give it much thought until I saw it a second time. But, you know, that'd be like really awesome to see, but that just kind of came out the blue and they just let it fly and never really explained it. Once they got on the planet and Maul and Savage were there, and then the Jedi came and they had an awesome, awesome fight. Probably the best of the series. I mean, just the way it happened, it was very brutal. And I thought the way that Ollie Gallia was killed was very brutal. And probably not for your kids, the way Savage stabbed her with his horns and then his lightsaber. And I just thought it was very brutal then when Savage's arm got cut off and another horn got cut off. So now he's down to like 6 or 7. But, yep, Savage getting beat up. And I also want to point out the music in this episode was amazing. It really stuck out to me. I don't know if Kevin Cunningham still does the music, or Kinner, I don't know how to pronounce his last name. But he did a great job, whoever wrote the music. The way the music, I think it was the same music from the Night Sisters trilogy, it was just really great. And at the end when Maul's leg gets shot off, he's going to have to get new legs, and you see that in the trailer too, and that's going to be awesome. I wonder what they're going to do with it, and I hope that they're not the same kind of like weird mechanical legs from Battle Droid parts, because I thought those were a little silly. But yeah, I thought that it was really cool, and it's going to be cool to see Sidious coming soon. But yeah, that's just my overall thoughts. I'd probably put it up there with Revenge and Carnage of Krell for my favorites. But going into next week, I'm excited for the new season, but I'm a little scared because I'm afraid these Onderon episodes are going to be like the Water War episodes beginning last season. I really did not enjoy those that much. First watching, I liked them, and then the more I watched it, I just didn't like it. And I hope these aren't like it. They have the potential to be great, but I'm really just a little scared. So thanks for the great podcast, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye.
What's up, guys? I'm calling with my thoughts of Season 5 premiere revival. And I thought that this was a really, really solid episode. Great story and love the details. I like the fact that we got to see Hondo and learn that his base was attacked by the Separatists. I thought that was a great line. I also like the fact that Obi-Wan has actually been looking for Savage and Maul for a while. We don't get to see where Ventress goes. That was disappointing, but not major. And Ollie Gallia died at the hands of Savage Press. That was a little shocking. Definitely felt the emotional tug there. Really got to know her back in Grievous Intrigue. I really liked her, but looking at that, it was just a great episode. The way she died was pretty creative, and actually Kenobi was kicking butt after that, and I love that part. And the fact that when Savage's arm was cut off, this like weird Dathomir green gas came out. I love that part. That was cool. I like they put that in there, but I like the fact that the Chancellor, we got to really see some of Lord Sidious in there. Gonna love where that goes. And overall, it was just a really great episode, and looking forward to seeing more. Thanks, guys.
Hey, Republic Forces Radio Network, this is Ben Devis from the forums, and it is so good to finally be back with not only the Clone Wars, but also you guys as well. And what a season premiere we got. My goodness, more than once did I find myself exclaiming out loud at what I was seeing on screen. All I'll say on it is, and forgive me for being too cheesy, that is certainly using your hand, Savage. My goodness, holy crap. I wonder what effect on the continuity that's going to have. Oh, great. Thanks, Nathan. You've got me worrying about that at every turn now. But if this premiere is any indication, or rather if the C6 trailer is any indication, I have high hopes for this season. I mean, I really hope this is going to be a good season. And as always, I look forward to hearing you guys' thoughts on this premiere and also the time change, if you decide to touch on that at all. If not, no big deal. But as always, even though there wasn't anything this past summer, I loved the show, and I can't wait to hear what everybody thought about Revival. Thanks, guys. Take care.
Thanks, everybody, for calling in. Yes, the time change, I think that's been the biggest head-turner for me so far this season, is that jump from Friday evening to Saturday morning, because I got to tell you, I'm not a morning guy, so thank you for the DVR.
Yeah, I got up early in the morning to see it, but I do still do the DVR and iTunes thing to see it later with my fiance, and I definitely felt like I got more out of it when I watched it when I hadn't just woken up specifically to see the episode. Like, I wasn't groggy or anything at those points.
I don't mind the time change. You know, I agree with most of you guys that we all have DVRs, and I didn't watch it at 9:30 in the morning. It's my day off. I'm not getting up at 9:30 in the morning to watch The Clone Wars, which is, for me, a not-so-positive sign, because I'm a fan, and if I'm not going to get up at 9:30 to watch it, then I'm not sure that kids who are not so into it, who aren't 30-something-year-old males who collect plastic. But it is on a strong block. You know, it's right before the DC Nation. But I think it's going to be very few weeks for me to get up at 9:30 and watch it. But it doesn't mean that they can't have a couple more seasons at 9:30 in the morning.
The level of violence was okay for Friday night. Saturday morning, not so much. And honestly, I just don't see Saturday morning as what it used to be. So honestly, putting a cartoon on Saturday morning nowadays, when you can watch cartoons 24 hours a day on 6 different channels. Yeah, I'm sorry, my kids don't pop out of bed and turn on the TV and, you know, eat their bowl of cereal in front of cartoons like I used to. My kids pop out of bed and turn on the freaking Xbox or something like that, or wake me up, because God knows I can't sleep in a day. But that's neither here nor there. So,
you know, the other thing, originally I used to watch Clone Wars with my boys right as they came out. You know, the same, you know, we would see it together for the first time. Now, I'm pre-screening all of these, and there's some of them that I don't let my 8 and 10-year-old watch because I'm not so sure it's appropriate. One thing that we didn't mention in this episode is the detail in the animation. When Savage loses his arm, you actually see bone. I'm thinking that somebody's going to kind of go, wait a minute, this is not appropriate for Saturday morning.
Okay. Well, I want to take this time to thank everybody who called in, everybody who tuned in to us after our nice summer break, and definitely Nathan, Jonathan, and Baron for joining me to talk about this one-shot episode. Now, this isn't a part of a story arc. From here, we go to the beginning of a four-part story arc next week. So, Republic Forces Radio Network will return next week to begin our next story arc, and we'll talk to everybody then. See you all later.
Good night, and it's good to be back.
See you in a week.
Later.
Thank you for listening to Republic Forces Radio Network. Remember, we want your thoughts on the next episode of the Clone Wars series. You can leave us a voicemail at 415-508-JEDI every week from the time the new episode airs, and voicemails received by 1 a.m. Sunday morning may be included in our next episode. You can find our reviews of previous Clone Wars episodes, as well as our summer series reviewing the classic droid cartoon series, at our website, www.republicforces.com. And be sure to listen to our other Star Wars podcast, Star Wars Action News, covering all aspects of Star Wars collecting, from figures to high-end collectibles to Star Wars Band-Aids. Republic Forces Radio Network is hosted by Jerry, Arnie, Dan, Jen, Barrent, and Nathan P. Butler of StarWarsFanWorks.com. Republic Forces Radio Network, RepublicForces.com, and Star Wars Action News are not affiliated with Lucasfilm or any other official Star Wars-related company. Star Wars and all that the Star Wars universe contains are copyright and trademark, Lucasfilm Limited, and no infringement is intended. Republic Forces Radio Network is a Venganza Media production. Copyright 2012. All rights reserved.